Hello on the walkers. Hello on the rockers. Pride Month continues on Broadway with two-time Tony Award winner, director and choreographer Jerry Mitchell. Of course, Kinky Boots, Legally Blonde, Hedwig, Broadway Bears, so many more. With my guest co-host Barrett Foa from Avenue Q Godspell, the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. Can they pick a longer title? And he's literally driving right now from San Francisco, so he's going to slip in shortly. And me. Not on Broadway, but your favorite host with the sassy most. Raise a glass and let the drinks begin. It's On the Rocks.
Thank you for being
Boulevard.
Life is a banquet, and most poor suckers are starving to death.
I'd like to propose a toast.
This is On the Rocks with Alexander, where I drink with your favorite celebrities as we talk about fashion, entertainment, pop culture, reality TV, and, well, that's about it. So pop a cork, lean back, and raise a glass to On the Rocks.
Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
Yes, listen to that applause. Buttons and bows and pantyhose, On the Rocks podcast, the place where we're too glam to give a damn. Everyone is crapping their pants because the new Hocus Pocus trailer came out for Hocus Pocus 2. Of course, we love Bette, Sarah, and Kathy, but let's hope it's a good movie. We know how sometimes reboots and sequels can go. I'm going to start the rumor that Jerry Mitchell's next movie to stage project will be Hocus Pocus. Let's start that rumor tonight. Like us on Twitter and Instagram at On the Rocks On Air and on Facebook, On the Rocks Radio Show. Send me an email. Book me for a wedding, funeral, quinceañera, bris. I don't care. I will show up and MC. Info at ontherocksradioshow.com. You can watch and or listen to now our almost 300 episodes at ontherocksradioshow.com or Apple TV, Roku, Amazon Fire TV on the outed.tv app, Facebook Watch, streaming with Pride on SVTV, and on Channel 31 on the East Coast. Hello, East Coast. All right, let's get the show on the road. At this is the point of the show I would be introducing my guest co-host, but like I said, he's on the 5 freeway somewhere, so he's going to slip in, Mr. Barrett Foa. So let's introduce our guest of honor, Mr. Jerry Mitchell, director and choreographer, made his Broadway and West End debuts as both director and choreographer, earning that same title, for Legally Blonde, which won the Olivier Award for Best Musical. He was also nominated for both the Tony and Drama Desk Awards for his choreography for Legally Blonde, as well as the Drama Desk Award for his direction, a Tony winner for his dazzling choreography created for the first revival of La Cage. Jerry was also nominated for that award for choreographing Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Hairspray, Never Gonna Dance in the Full Monty, and for Broadway, he also choreographed Catch Me If You Can, and revivals of Charlie Brown, Rocky Horror Show, and Gypsy, starring Bernadette Peters, and for off-Broadway and film, Hedwig and the Angry Inch and Jeffrey. Other film work includes In-N-Out, Camp, Drop Dead Gorgeous, Scent of a Woman, so many more. And 30 years ago, I cannot believe it's been 30 years, he conceived and created Broadway Bears, a comedy burlesque show performed annually for the charity Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. Their fundraising efforts have resulted in more than $24 million raised for the charity. Also, Jerry's production of Pretty Woman is currently touring Southern California, and Kinky Boots fans, Kinky Boots is making a limited appearance with an all-star cast, including Jake Shears, Wayne Brady, Kelly Marie Tran, and Marissa Jarrett Winokur at the Hollywood Bowl early July. Check out our chat with Jake Shears, by the way, a couple of weeks ago, who spilled the tea about returning to his character post-COVID. But please welcome Mr. Jerry Mitchell.
On the Rocks, cheers.
On the Rocks, cheers. I have to tell you, revisiting some of the earlier pictures from Broadway Bears, you bared all, Mr. Mitchell.
Well, that's how it all started. I was in the Will Rogers Follies dancing naked on a drum 8 times a week, and I was receiving diamonds and sapphires backstage, no lie, truth, Cartier clocks and boxes from Madison Avenue. And my dressing roommates, Jason Opsahl, John Gannon, Troy Britton Johnson, and Jack Doyle said, you should go do that at the bar at Splash. And a light bulb went off over my head. I put on a show and we made some money. I said, I can do this better. I'll add girls. I can do this better. I'll add a theme. And after 30 years, I was actually in New York. I got back to LA. I'm in LA now. I got back to LA last night. I was in New York Sunday for the 30th anniversary show, and we made $1.9 million doing a burlesque show on Gay Pride. Happy Pride, everybody. Yes,
everything like came together like dominoes. What a beautiful moment that must have been. And I have to tell you, Will Rogers Follies, I saw you in that. It was my first ever Broadway show I had ever seen in my entire life. And do you know what I remember most? Was, of course, the tight pants that they made you guys wear. I was like, hey, maybe I might be a little different than the other boys.
I remember Willa Kim in my fitting with literally pulling that up my crack and putting a pin in there.
Yep.
And I was like, wow, this is going to be tight.
Leg up. Jerry, we have all this info, accolades, credits, Tony Awards, et cetera, for your time on Broadway. But before we get to talking about that, I want to know about early Jerry. I have a photo of you in the Music Man from your hometown, Pawpaw, Michigan. And I can see that the theater bug kind of bit you early. What was your first exposure to theater? And what was theater life growing up in Pawpaw?
It was that. It was the Music Man. I was 10 years old. And my next door neighbor was doing the show, and they needed boys for the boys band. And she came home and said, come with me to rehearsal. And so I grabbed a clarinet I had downstairs in the basement. That was an old broken clarinet. And I got on stage, marched around with it. And Charlie Burkett, who was directing it and playing the Music Man, it's a Village production, put me in the show. And his wife was the musical director and playing Marion.
So cute. And
they were friends for life. Charlie actually sent me my first telegram, a real telegram, on my first Broadway show backstage. And I was 10, and I knew then after that production that this is what I wanted to do the rest of my life.
You know, there's a certain destiny to your life. Everything has just seemed to, like, come into place. Did you, after doing Music Man, did you go out and start listening to all the different cast recordings and then really start to get into theater? Or how did that evolve?
I didn't really know about Broadway, and I didn't really know about the scope of Broadway and theater. It's sort of, I grew up in a very, very small town. We, like I said, we had the Village Playhouse, and we had a dance studio, which I later attended at 15 and started studying. And but there were other theaters in the community. In Kalamazoo, there was a youth theater, which I got involved in. I apprenticed at the Hope Summer Repertory Theater in Holland, Michigan, which I'm going to go back to this summer for their 50th anniversary. And that really was, I met a lot of people who were professional and on the way to being professional, and a lot of seniors and juniors in college programs, which is where I met people from Webster College, where then I applied and got a scholarship and went to Webster University to the conservatory program, and in St. Louis, Missouri. So there were, you know, like you say, destiny. You know, it's funny sometimes I think about the luck I've had, but it's not the luck. It's about the people I met and the opportunities that were put before me and how I always said yes to those opportunities. And that led to the next and to the next and to the next. And so I was, how does a kid who grows up in cornfields in Michigan end up on Broadway? I mean,
right. Now, being part of a small town, was there any pushback such as, you know, boys don't study theater, 15-year-old boys don't study dance?
You know, I was gay, obviously. I knew that at a very young age, but a lot of my, I don't know if a lot of other people did. I had two older brothers, and I loved my older brothers. They're still around, and we're the best of friends. And, you know, they were very athletic, and I wanted to be like them. So I was a great athlete. I was, I got a senior medal or pin or letter or whatever my freshman year in basketball, football, and track. I mean, I was that much of an athlete. So, and I think the athletics actually helped my coordination for dancing and vice versa. Mm. And I continued to play sports in basketball and in track, especially all through my senior year. So I knew that I had girlfriends in high school. There was no Will and Grace. I didn't know another person who was gay, so I didn't have a gay role model. Mm. And I was very much closeted because I was trying to be liked, right? Basically, I think coming out is, for me anyways, and I think for a lot of people, it's the moment you realize that I am going to let the world know exactly who I am. And if they don't love me for who I am, I'll be all right.
Right.
Right. And I think that was what it was for me. And I came out at a much later date, but you know, it was tough growing up in Pawpaw. Because I was popular and because I was athletic, I didn't get a lot of bullying like I know young people do nowadays and have in the past. I was fortunate. And plus I had two older brothers. And if anybody even mentioned the word gay or anything like that, my brothers were pretty much standing up for me always. So I felt like I had some protection.
Did you kind of come into your sexuality? I mean, you went from Papa to St. Louis, and then of course you went to New York, you know, so you were kind of exposed to like a bigger culture. Was there ever like a little culture shock with that transition?
No, I was ready for that transition. I actually, earlier to that, my senior year in high school, I toured the United States in a production of West Side Story with the Young Americans.
Oh, Young Americans, yes.
When I joined the Young Americans, I met a lot of other young gay people mm-hmm. like myself. Yes. and then I got to Webster College and the campus, the Webster University. I was on campus for 2 weeks and a beautiful, incredible costume designer, Jeff Struckman, approached me and asked me out, and we started dating. We dated for 2 years, and he was my college sweetheart. Oh. Jeff's no longer here. He died of AIDS, and as did many of my college friends. And that's why I started Broadway Bears. So I got to New York City in 1980, and I came to New York for spring break. I'd gotten my equity card at the Muni Opera in St. Louis between my freshman and sophomore year, came to New York to spring break to visit some friends. They were going to an audition. I went with them because I had an equity card. They got cut and I got the musical. I went back to school and I said, I got a Broadway show. It's called Brigadoon, and I'm going to be dancing for Agnes DeMille.
Wow.
And they went, we'll give you credit to go to New York for your junior year to be in the show. And that was the start of it all.
That's amazing. I mean, when you talk about an iconic show with an iconic choreographer, what did you learn most about the business from doing that first big Broadway show, Brigadoon?
Oh, I everything. I learned so much. I mean, first of all, I don't feel old. I'm not old.
Right.
When I did Brigadoon, there were no microphones.
It was theater.
Sing out, Louise. And there were floor mics. There were two head mics, and they were worn by Marty Vendevic and Meg Bussard, who were the leads. Maybe a couple of the other semi-principals wore mics, but there were no head mics for the ensemble. I don't think I had a microphone until I was in my fifth Broadway show.
Wow. Talk about the evolution of Broadway. Yeah. A question I got from you from a dancer is, how did you make that transition to dancer on Broadway to choreographer for some of those early works like Jeffrey, Hedwig, Charlie Brown?
I wanted to be a Broadway choreographer, right? And I sort of knew that by the time I was 23. I wanted to choreograph on Broadway. I had choreographed everything in the Pawpaw Village Players. I choreographed in college. I choreographed the Pom Pom Girls, the flag team. I choreographed everybody. So I knew I could do that and I wanted to do that, but I also wanted to dance. So I was in my fourth Broadway show, On Your Toes, and I was doing Balanchine Ballets and Donald Sadler's tap choreography. And I realized that I could be a choreographer during that show. I was 23. And so I pulled myself out of auditioning to be a dancer, and I raised my hand to be the assistant to every choreographer I knew. And I'd already been doing that. So from 23 until I was 40, when I got my first Broadway show, I was an assistant to everyone and anyone who needed an assistant. And I was doing all the workshops in New York City. I went back to the stage when I was 30 to be in the Will Rogers because Jeff Calhoun was a dear friend of mine. We had done the Whorehouse movie together out here, and he asked me to come join him. He was going to choreograph it for Tommy, and he needed me to be the ending of the dawn. And I said, absolutely. And so I did that show. I went back to that show. But I was assisting and assisting and assisting. And while I was doing I had done a couple plays. I did Terrence's play, Lips Together, Teeth Apart at the Manhattan Theater Club. I had done Jeffrey off-Broadway. I had done Hedwig off-Broadway as a choreographer, but I didn't have a Broadway show yet. And I was in the Will Rogers Follies, and I got a call to go meet some producers on 7th Avenue at 11 o'clock at night after the show to talk about some choreography for a movie. And I went and met them, and they said, come meet the star tomorrow. He's in dance class. I walked in, and who was it? Al Pacino. He's taking a tango lesson, and he had to do this tango in a film called Scent of a Woman. And I said, well, he's just doing authentic tango, and you need to choreograph it for him. So I started choreographing that afternoon. I taught him half of the dance that afternoon.
Wow.
And it was finished that by the next day. And I did that film, and that film and that tango, suddenly I did In and Out, Meet Joe Black, The Mirror Has Two Faces, One Truth. I did all of these films back and still waiting to get a Broadway show. But it was my production of Follies at the Paper Mill Playhouse that I choreographed, and Michael Mayer happened to come out to see it and then met with me because Andrew Lippa hooked us up, and Andrew was doing the music for Charlie Brown, and I met Michael, and Michael said, hired me, and that was my first Broadway show as a choreographer, and Michael now lives two doors down from me in the same building. We live in the same building in New York City.
I love stories like that. And I really want to talk about Charlie Brown because it was your first Broadway solo choreographing show. We know multicultural casting, they did multicultural casting before it was quote unquote cool like it is now, or it's a hot topic. I did the show for a year, and I've been collecting Snoopy stuff and Peanut stuff hardcore since I was a kid, like hardcore Peanuts collector. So there was this mashup of seeing my beloved comic book characters presented so differently that for me, even as liberal as I am, it was a jarring experience. We weren't as woke yet, and audiences weren't allowed to feel like, hey, this is okay to have our characters kind of change. And there was a very fine line with that project, because we've literally seen these characters inked out on paper, but we were reflecting this whole diversity of the theater and of audiences. So in approaching that project, what is your take on how much should we be honoring the original material, and can theater become sometimes too woke? What is that fine line there?
Are you talking about Charlie Brown?
Yeah.
I never thought Charlie Brown was woke for one minute.
I mean, we had B.D. Wong, we had Schroeder.
It's interesting that you're saying that now because, you know, because of if you're comparing it just to a black and white sketch, mm-hmm. I can see what you're saying. Look, I don't even like the word woke.
Yeah,
I
think it's a difficult word.
I think it's a bogus word, and I think it's a word for people who don't want to move forward. Mm. I think the world, everything changes. Nothing stays the same, right? And why shouldn't Linus be black? I mean, Linus could be black. Our Linus was Asian, but yep. Our Schroeder was black.
Right.
Why not? Why couldn't Lucy be black? What's the big deal? You know, I know a lot of black Lucys.
Yes.
Right? So, well, why can't Lucy be black? What's the problem? If the actor comes in and the actor can actually deliver the material in the way it is intended, I really don't care too much what they look like. I don't care if they're skinny. I don't care if they're fat. I don't care if they're black. I don't care if they're white. I don't care what race they are. If they can deliver the story and the material the way it's intended, unless there is a specific instance in which the race is part of the story, like Hairspray, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Seaweed, you know, the Motormouth Gang and Seaweed, they have to be black characters. And the nicest kids in town have to be white characters in order to tell the story of integration in the early 60s, right? So that's important to the story. But, you know, Kinky Boots is a perfect example. I chose to have Lola played by a black actor because it's the way I saw the show. And I think Lola being black and Charlie being white without saying anything puts another layer on top of the material. And, you know, when we do the show in Korea or we do it in Japan, there are no black actors playing those roles. Those are all Korean actors and all Japanese actors. The story still works. It comes across absolutely 100% authentic, but I prefer that interracial mix in the show and in the story.
I think you said that so wonderfully. And what I do love about Your Good Man and Charlie Brown, it was kind of that beginning where we were questioning, you know, what's normal, who can play what? And it kind of started, you know, a lot of discussion.
Everything's normal. What's unnormal is the way people see the world.
Right, right. I'm so excited to announce that my guest co-host, he has literally driven from San Francisco and wants it to be here. Please welcome, I won't read his whole bio, but we know him.
Well, the most important role he's ever played is starring in Broadway Bears.
There we go. In fact, we have a picture of it. Please welcome Barrett Foa, Avenue Q, Godspell. Tony, there's a picture of...
It's
like an older picture. A bunch of sexy guys in unitards, and then there's a puppet.
Sexy guys in unitards. There we go.
Look at Barrett Foa's Foa.
Oh, my God.
What year was that, Barrett? Was that New York Strips?
That was New York. No, that was the one before that, which was the one before that.
Film strips?
No.
I don't remember. Can't remember. They all run together.
It was so cool being Rod from Avenue Q and being the dirty, super dirty Rod. Like all these doll parts, and it was really hot and sexy. And then the next year I was New York Strip with Andrew Rannells. And
yeah,
we were the through line. We were like the main.
You were the star of that one because you guys were on a journey through New York City going on tour. And Dennis Jones, my dear friend Dennis Jones, who was one of my dancers, who became one of my assistants, who became a choreographer and was nominated for a Tony Award. Dennis directed that year.
That's right. That was the first year he did, right? Is that right?
I think it was.
Yeah. It was, and he was so great. And Andrew and I, we were Chip and Chip. And we were from Iowa. Or is it Ohio? I can't remember. But we're here visiting New York. And what's it like? And Sarah Gettelfinger will tell you. Oh my God, it was so fun. The crazy thing about Broadway Bears is that until I went to it, I always thought that it was like a strip show where someone... Have you guys gotten into Broadway Bears yet?
A little bit? Briefly, yeah.
Can I just go back?
Yeah,
because
please.
It's just my favorite and just happened, and I just watched that reel that on YouTube. It's just outstanding, that sizzle reel. Wow.
Yeah.
That I just thought it was like a sexy Broadway person being like, nah, 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 nah. And it would like, okay, like put some dollar bills in that person's like G string. And like, I'm sure like, yeah, great bodies. And like, there'll be like one or two sort of sexy. And then I went.
It's an experience.
And just my mind was, I was like, of course Broadway is doing strip shows like this. Like the most amazing costumes, the most amazing makeup, the most amazing choreography and visuals and just thousands of people.
The most important element to burlesque is comedy.
Yes.
Thank you.
Right? See, people forget that burlesque was built on comics. Mm-hmm. It was vaudeville comics and strippers. So the comedy was such an important part of it. And I've always said that the tongue must be firmly planted in the cheek if you're going to work on Broadway Bears. The comedy is as important as the strip.
I love that. Because it does give you that like that release, that like sexiness, and then that sort of like comic release and relief from that. It's so old school and it translates so well to the new school.
Yes.
And how amazing 30 years, like
how amazing 30 years. And last Sunday, we made like almost $1.9 million. We've made $24.5 million in 30 years doing Broadway Bears.
I mean,
it's crazy.
Bravo, Jerry Mitchell.
Crazy.
How did you,
started with eight guys on a bar. If somebody would have told me the first year, well, we're going to be doing this in 30 years and you're going to net $2 million. I'd say you are crazy.
Jerry, when was that kind of shift where you realized it wasn't just like a fun yearly gathering, that the shift was like, well, now it's become like the event of the year and it's become such an important part of the Broadway community and the audience as well?
There were several shifts. I mean, yeah. Right after the first one, I knew that this could be better. And that's when I added girls. And then right after the second one, I said, I knew this could be better. And I added a theme. But by the time we got to the seventh Broadway Bears, we were performing at Webster Hall. Andrew Lippa had seen the sixth one and he had sent me a letter and said, Jerry, I really loved the show. And I wrote this song for Cinderella to do a strip. Would you put it in next year's show? And I wrote him back and said, Andrew, next year's show is going to be a circus theme. So I have to, and I didn't know who Andrew was. And I said, I have to do a circus themed Broadway Bears. Would you be interested in writing an opening number? And he wrote The Bearest Show on Earth. And everything changed about Broadway Bears because now we had an opening theme song, which we had from that day forward to every Broadway Bears.
Oh, I don't think I realized that's Andrew Lippa who did that. Wow.
Okay. Hugh Hodges, who owned the company Spotco and created all the ad campaigns for many Broadway shows, most importantly, Chicago, the revival 25 years ago. I saw those posters in Times Square, and this was during Broadway Bears 6-7, and I called him up and I went into his office and I said, I want you to create a Broadway Bears poster for me, for my benefit. And he said, what are you talking about? And I told him about it. He created the poster for The Bearest Show on Earth. He got Max Vidugal, the photographer, to shoot the dancers. And that poster is legendary. Mm-hmm. And Dennis Jones is hanging from a rope naked.
Oh, yeah.
And
I have the book.
And
in
then,
room.
since seven, Spotco has done every ad campaign. And Andrew Eccles, who is another spectacular high-end photographer, for free has shot campaign after campaign, some of the most gorgeous campaigns you could ever imagine. I mean, this is like, you know, he shoots celebrity stars at the Oscars. This, you know, Andrew Eccles, go look up his work. His work is stunning. And he does it for us because he loves doing it.
And those kinds of things are some of those steps you were talking about, those elevations.
Yeah, it just grew. Just boom, boom, boom. I mean, we had Ariana DeBose came by Broadway Bears on Sunday, and all she was going to do was come out and walk. She walked down the runway, and she spun and dropped into a split, and the audience lost their shit. Ramin Karimu took his clothes off. Leslie Marguerite and Nathan Lee Graham and Malik were the hosts. The girls from SCOTUS, Juliana Huff, Julie White, they came out and they tore the audience up with comedy. It was just, it was like, what in the heck is happening, people?
Wow. I love it. And it also celebrates, like, you know, there's always been this, like, especially now with, like, the conservative struggle. It's like, we're celebrating sexuality, too. We're celebrating sexuality as an LGBTQ community. We're celebrating the sexuality, no matter what you look like, who you are, whatever. We're celebrating that as well as a great cause. And the younger generation is seeing the bigger picture of HIV and AIDS and the whole history of that. It's such an exciting...
And body positivity.
Trying to erase the stigma that comes along with HIV and AIDS.
100%.
I mean, absolutely.
You know, when it first started, I had no money to go to any AIDS fundraising dinners. I was dancing in a Broadway show. So I put on the show so people like myself could feel like they were doing something, giving back, giving money. So that was why I did it. And then I also was dating at the time. And I felt like, you know, people were afraid to touch. And I wanted to tell people it's okay to touch. It's okay to be sexy in the time of age. You just have to be smart and be safe. Mm. And those were the messages that the show was promoting. And they still promote to this day.
I love it.
All right, back to career. I want to talk about Hedwig. You know, we know Hedwig has become iconic in terms of music, as theater, as an art piece, as a film. But at the time that you took it, you probably were like, what fresh hell is this? Like, what is this? And was Hedwig one of the first projects that you took from stage to film?
Well, Hedwig. Okay, so Hedwig was a fluke for me as a choreographer. So they were working on the show downtown at the Westbeth. And I get a phone call from David Binder and he says, I'm working on this show with John Cameron Mitchell and we need some choreography. This is again, before I have a Broadway show, will you come down and help us out? So I go to the Westbeth and I'm watching it. I'm going, and then I start helping stage it. And, you know, I was there for like 2 nights, 2 days, 3 days. I don't know. I was still dancing in a show, probably the Will Rogers Follies when I did it. And, you know, he paid me with a cordless telephone. bought me a cordless telephone. And the show didn't do well at the West Bath. And then they closed it down, and then they retooled it, and they took away all the scenery and did the version at the Jane Street, mm-hmm. and called me back down there, and I had him do the car wash on some people in the audience.
That's
and
right.
a few other tricks, and the show just took off. I mean, it took off. And we did that production for many years, lots of people, and then came out here and did one out here. And then when the movie happened, I was actually doing another show, and John called me and said, can I do the choreography that we did? I'd never went to the set. I said, John, you know the choreography, just do the choreography. So he gave me a credit for the film choreography.
I did not know that.
But he just did, it was a solo act. He was doing the choreography from the show.
That was such a special thing to see. Yeah. I saw that original cast. I mean, I was born and raised in New York, so I sort of got a little more New York and Broadway even in my like middle school and teen years. So I mean, I saw you dance in Will Rogers.
I was telling you, that was the first Broadway show I ever saw, so I saw him in that production.
Huge. And then
Well, it's funny, we're talking about Hedwig. The second show I saw was Secret Garden with the whole original cast. So night one was Will Rogers, and then night two was Secret Garden. I'm like, this is Broadway.
Love it.
Oh, wow.
Jerry, you've had such a great opportunity to work on such beloved material that we've all known love, like Rocky Horror, Gypsy, Lacage, to movie-to-stage material like Legally Blonde, Full Monty, Hairspray, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, and now Pretty Woman. Let's just say adaptation is probably the first word in your dictionary that pops up. What are the most important elements to consider or honor when you are taking a piece that is well known to either theater audiences or movie audiences and translating them to a new presentation, a whole new style?
Well, I have to love the original material, right? So especially now, I have to really love the original material. When I saw Pretty Woman, 30 years ago, I knew that it was I thought at the time it was the most fantastic Cinderella story ever and would make a fantastic musical. And I still think it is a great musical. I think the version that's out here in London and the version, I mean, here in LA and the version that's playing in London is superior to the Broadway version because I made quite a few changes after Broadway. And I just love the show, and I think Gary Marshall is a genius, and it's a great musical, and Bryan Adams' songs are great, and Adam sings the shit out of the score.
I mean, Adam Pascal, what is with that voice?
Yeah, and Olivia too, Olivia Valli, yeah. who's playing Vivian, Frankie Valli's granddaughter.
Yeah.
I mean, the girl sings.
Oh,
right,
amazing.
So it's and KT Kyle Taylor Parker, I call him KTP because that was my name for him, and he was one of my original angels in Kinky Boots, and then he became Lola on the road, and then he came Lola on Broadway, and then he was in another show starring for me. And so when I was looking for somebody to play Mr. Thompson / Happy Man, he auditioned, and I said, if you want to play this part, you've got the role. And he came in and did the part, and he is killing it. Jessica Crouch's Kit DeLuca is killing it. Matt Stokey is killing it. Oh. They're all incredible.
Well, and talking,
what I look for is material that I fall in love with.
Yes.
Because you're going to spend 3 years, 2, 3, 4, 5 years transforming that material from a movie to a musical, and you're going to go through several stages, and you're going to be surrounded by the same people for 3, 5 years. So you better surround yourself with a group of people you really want to spend some time with, because you're going to spend a lot of time together to make musicals. When you see a musical, you think, oh, this is great. Yeah. You don't realize it took them 5 years to make that musical.
Yeah. Well, it's such a collaborative art form.
Yeah.
And making the transition from choreographer to director choreographer, does that sort of takes one less voice, one voice away, sort of,
yeah.
Which is probably can be helpful because you're like, okay, I have a unifying vision, but also is it like one less person to like bounce stuff off
you,
of?
You got it. It's helpful and it's lonely.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So the job, first of all, when I think of musicals that I've loved and I think are spectacular, they've usually been directed and choreographed by one person, or they've been directed and choreographed by a team that was so tight, you don't know where the direction stopped and the choreography took over, right? Yeah. Because they work seamlessly together. And that's the trick. I always say that the success of a musical is in the transitions, because we view entertainment today without pause, right? We don't have to black out. We don't have to bring in a piece of scenery and change what's behind it and lift a piece of scenery. We just watch films that are seamless. And so we've gotten used to watching that kind of entertainment, and we expect to see it when we walk into a theater. Michael Bennett was one of the first that I worked with, directors and choreographers, who actually used the musical Dreamgirls. I'm quoting Dreamgirls, but also A Chorus Line, as if you were watching a film. It just didn't stop. It just rolled on into the next segment. So the transitions were seamless. And I think that's really the key to a musical.
I love that insight. But I do want to talk about that transition from choreographer to director. We know Legally Blonde was your first big project where you had both roles. That must have been nerve-wracking. And then let's add a reality show on top of that. Was there any part of you that was a little nervous and like, okay, like to
Never.
Your point now,
I was not nervous for one moment. And the reality show was after we opened, but I just, you know, I don't usually get nervous, and I don't have a lot of anxiety. Although the past month I've had so much anxiety because I'm testing every day.
Right.
You know, because I was in Korea three weeks ago for Kinky Boots. Then I was here for Kinky Boots and Pretty Woman. Then I was in New York for Kinky Boots and Broadway Bears. And then I was back here. And every time I take that test, I go, please, God, please. I don't have an understudy. Help. Right? So, you know, it's just a strange time for us to create shows in this pandemic world we're living in.
But you're certainly... Yeah, but you're doing the damn thing, you know?
We are. We're moving forward, and we're putting our best foot forward, and we're seizing the day, to quote another musical. No, I never did. But the challenge really, I didn't get nervous. I was excited every day of Legally Blonde. It was a gift. Larry and Nell and Heather's work inspired me every day. Their collaboration inspired me. And I think we created a brilliant musical that was poo-pooed by one person in New York City and went on to prove itself to be a massive hit on the road, which took us to London to win the Olivier and Best Actress and Best Featured Actress, which took us to Australia to win Best Musical, Best Actress, Best Featured Actress, Best Direction, Best Choreography. Yes. I mean, and now it's done by every high school in the world. I mean, and you know, I'm going to be working on I can't tell you, but anyway.
Oh, almost slipped. Come on. Almost slipped.
What's
it's
next?
It's a musical that people still love. People come up to me all the time about that musical.
I do want to talk about Kinky Boots. It's coming to the Hollywood Bowl. It's had so many reincarnations and different versions, like around the globe. We talked to Jake Shears a couple of weeks ago, who really talked about what it was like returning to the character after COVID, after his breakup, after his absolute nerves, he said, in taking the role originally with you, because he's like, you know, I'm not this kind of performer, 8 shows a week and all of that. He was so candid about his experience and wanting to please you, wanting to please the cast, and wanting to please, you know, audiences. It was a real turning point for him as a solo performer, as well as his experience with the Broadway world. And so he talked about what it's like coming back to it, where he can relax into it. And he's come back to the character different because of his experiences. I want to know what it's like for you working the show at the Hollywood Bowl, how you've kind of changed personally.
Well, let me first talk about Jake and Wayne Brady. So Jake and Wayne both played the role together on Broadway. And I don't put the replacements into the show. That job is done by my associate director and associate choreographer, DB Bonds and Rusty Mowry. Then I come and see the show and I give notes to them on their performance. I meet the stars, because there were several, and I sometimes work with them. But I didn't really have any big work sessions with the guys because they were sensational. The first day of rehearsal at the Hollywood Bowl, both of those gentlemen showed up off book. They had already reworked on every line. And Rusty was out here a week early to work with Wayne on all the dances in the heels because he wanted to go over it. So that's number one. These boys are serious and they are in it to win it. Jake is, the reason I thought Jake would make a fantastic Charlie was because Cindy does a benefit every Christmas and she invites other recording artists to perform in her benefit. And Jake did the benefit the year I saw him in the benefit, and I thought, well, he would make a fantastic Charlie. His energy, his pop energy, was what I always saw in the role, and why I wanted Stark so bad when I first hired Stark. And sure enough, he said yes and came into the show, and he delivered, and he was fantastic. And I just think he's grown so much. And, you know, just to finish out Jake, we have spent the past couple of years working together on a new musical that I won't tell you because Jake hasn't said anything, but we're working on an original new musical that I'm very, very excited about. Jake Shears, Stephen Remus, myself, and Troy Britton Johnson. And it's going to blow some people away. Maybe a whole bunch of people.
Is it based on something? Is it based on a movie?
No, it's based on a book, a book that we bought the rights to. And you all know who wrote it. I'm not going to say anything else. And 100 questions, you won't get it out of me, but we're writing a new music. It's really, really great.
That's so
great. And working with Jake, I just love him to death. Wayne Brady.
I do want to go just to Jake for 1 second.
Yes.
I went on a date.
Oh, spill the tea. Spill the tea. He was talking about dating and he's not very good at it, he said.
I went on a date with Jake, but his name was Jason at the time. Don't tell anyone.
Yeah.
And we went, do you remember when Garth Brooks had a
alter ego? Yes.
Well, he for some reason was invited to a VH1 taping of this alter ego of Garth Brooks. We didn't know his music or who he was or what was actually happening. And neither of us were particularly fans of whoever this alter ego was. But we had a date and we sat through some rock songs. And then we said, that was so wonderful to meet you. And then we went on. But every time I see Jake, we sort of like come in and out and we tell the story of like, remember that date that sort of didn't go anywhere. But that's the guy. What's I can't remember his name.
Chris Gaines.
Yeah. Oh, wow. God. So edgy.
That was a tough time
But Jake is such a sweetheart, and we laugh about that horrible first date every time. I can't wait to see him do Kinky Boots.
Yeah.
He's fantastic in the role.
And
Wayne Brady, the funniest man, I think. Maybe one of the funniest people I've ever had the opportunity to work with.
Yeah.
Spontaneous, brilliant. So I was doing a ABC musical called Geppetto for Drew Carey. Drew Carey, I choreographed an episode of the Drew Carey Show, and Drew was doing Geppetto, and he asked me if I'd be interested in choreographing it. I said, of course. And so I came out here to do it. Tom Moore directed it. Julie Louis-Dreyfus was in it as the Blue Fairy. And Wayne had a part in it. I had nothing to do with Wayne, but I went to the set and watched him work. And I kept thinking, God, he's so good. He's so, so special, so funny. And sure enough, Billy was going to leave. And I said, or go on vacation. I said, we should get a Wayne Brady to play this part. And we reached out to Wayne and he said yes. And he came in and auditioned and sang all the stuff. And I said, hire that man. He can do this part. He will knock it out of the park.
He's really killing. All his stage work is so versatile.
And took you know, by then the show had been playing for about a year, and Billy was, you know, the show was tight. It was an original company. It was an original Tony Award-winning company. Everyone had relationships. So the person who was going to come in and replace Billy needed to fit into that family. Not only did he fit into it and fit into the role, but he led that family to an even more happy place. Not just the people on stage, the people backstage. If you don't like Wayne Brady, you have a problem.
I've heard that from everybody.
You need to go to a doctor and get checked, because the man is brilliant and generous and kind and wonderful. And I would do anything with Wayne Brady. And when you have somebody in the star of the show and leading the company that way, boy, it sure makes it fun to go to work.
Jerry, I received this question from one of your fans. What do you think the biggest challenge, or what has been your biggest challenge in your career? I have in parentheses, love never dies, but that's just my assumption.
Paint never dries. Love never dies. Oh, God.
That's funny.
What has been the biggest challenge in my career? I think early in my career, learning to say no to a project.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I talked earlier about you know, wanting to work on things that I really love and feel passionate about. When you're super young and starting out, you say yes to everything because you think I have to take the next job.
Right.
But you realize soon that if you trust your instincts, the next job will come, and you need to make sure you're doing something that you can bring all of yourself to the project. So I think that has probably been the biggest thing for me in the learning curve.
This comes from a dancer from Broadway. What do you think the biggest challenges facing new dancers on Broadway are?
I think one of the biggest challenges for dancers is not to compare themselves to the dancer standing next to them.
Oh, that's really good advice. For any part of your life, that's good advice.
And to figure out who they are individually, because I hire individuals. I'm always looking for somebody's individual personality. If you look at the musicals I've done, rarely have they all been standing in a row looking identical, wearing the same costume.
Right.
It's just not where I go. I'm looking for the individual and what the individual brings to the whole picture. I think it's a much prettier tapestry.
This is another question from a fan. You've gone for working with some of the biggest Broadway greats to becoming one. Do you ever get starstruck anymore?
Do I? Oh, yeah. I get numb sometimes when I meet celebrities or stars who are super huge and they're going, oh God, you know, yeah.
That's funny to me because you're like, you've directed them, you've choreographed with them, they've come to your benefits. That is so funny that you still get starstruck.
Is there anyone lately that you've met that you're like, ooh, that one made me a little weak in the knees?
Not recently, but back in the day. You know, if I'm working on a movie that I can't really talk about either yet, but it's an original movie musical, and some of the names that are on it, I go, if I get that person, how am I going to direct that person? They're a big star, right?
That's so cute.
They're looking at you. They need you.
That'll last for about a week.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, you missed that step. I have to know, your first Tony nomination, I don't know if you remember where you were when you found out about it. It was for Full Monty. But knowing, you know, that kid in Music Man from Papa.
Exactly where I was.
I want to hear this. I love these behind-the-scenes stories.
I was on the set of a brilliant film called Marcy X. Do you know the film?
No. I remember that. I don't.
It went straight to video. Lisa Kudrow. Oh. Jane Krakowski, Deanne Cox, Sherry Renee Scott. Her dad is a record executive. He has a heart attack and she has to take over the label. And Damon Wayans is the hip hop. It went straight to video. And Mark Shaman was working on the music, and this was early computer days. And he's watching the nominations on New York One on his computer. We're up at Reverend Ike's filming one of the numbers and Power in the Purse. And Mark and Jules and Peggy were lighting it. Jules Fisher and Peggy Eisenhower were lighting it. And I think they got nominated. and I got nominated. And did Mark get nominated that year for something? Anyways, that was the first. And Mark said, "You got a nomination for her." And I wasn't even expecting it. I didn't even think about it. And it was the Full Monty. And I was like, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God." And then I got nominated like every year following that for the next 5 years. And twice when I won my first Tony, I was nominated for Dirty Rotten and La Cage. I was against myself. And Jules Fisher said, "Well, you're not going to win because when you're nominated against yourself, your vote gets split. You're never going to win." So, yeah, those were my.
Are you ever scared that you're going to be like, "Oh, I'm the guy that only does movie musicals, into musicals," and like I want to go away from that? Is that ever a thing?
No,
or if it's good source material.
I don't worry about that. I don't worry about doing gay musicals. I'll do all the gay musicals. I don't care. I basically, the projects that I'm working on, I have four musicals that are in different stages of development. One is a film, two are books. No, I have five, sorry. One is a film, two are books, and two are completely original.
Oh, amazing. Completely original.
Completely original. Original scores, original books, and original stories. And so, you know, I'm doing those five musicals because I'm passionate about each of those stories for different reasons.
So it doesn't matter if it's been you don't think you're like pegged as like the musical guy, or I want to get out of that corner. No, because it's good stuff.
I think a lot of producers hand a lot of us who are directors and choreographers films. And they want to develop films just because I don't think a lot of people read anymore.
That is very true.
Yeah.
Because we're in the scrolling generation where everybody's just scrolling.
I think they watch a video and they think, well, this would be a great, you know, like Legally Blonde, for instance. Nobody went back and read the original book that the movie was
based on. That's very true.
There was a book. Either. Amanda Brown wrote a book that became the movie, that became the musical, right? So, you know, the source material, I don't care where it comes from. If it's good and I'm passionate about the story, let's go.
And are you directing and choreographing all five of those?
Yeah.
And that's the way you want it, right? What
I'm actually doing is I'm trying to expand my teams. So I'm looking for a lot of young choreographer. I'm not looking for you. I know a lot of young choreographers, and many of them have done Broadway Bears. You know what's interesting about Broadway Bears is I did 13 Broadway Bears before I got a Broadway show. And by the time I got my second Broadway show or third Hairspray, which suddenly was pulling me all over because we were doing a national tour, we were doing international companies, we were doing a London production, and I didn't have time to do Broadway Bears anymore as the choreographer director. I said, I'm going to pass this on to Jody, on to Dennis, on to other people who I think want to move into what I'm doing, and let them be at the lead, because Broadway Bears offers you the opportunity as a director choreographer to conceive and create with the best in the business. And I learned so much by doing Broadway Bears. How many choreographers have come out of Broadway Bears? Rob Ashford choreographed in Broadway Bears 2. Sergio Trujillo choreographed in Broadway Bears 3, 4, 5, 6. Dennis Jones, Lauren Lataro, Josh Rhodes, Lee Wilkinson. I mean, Dante Keene. So many of these Broadway choreographers first did Broadway Bears before they got a Broadway show. So this benefit has given opportunity to young choreographers to work in the industry with the very best people in their industry as they continue to hone their own craft. I think it's sensational.
So are you going to hire one of those people to be your choreographer
one
of these days?
Nick Kinkle has been my co-choreographer on Halftime and my assistant on other shows. So yeah, a lot of them, if the style, each of them have their own style and their own sort of way of choreographing. If it fits the material or matches it, they're certainly in my, you know, Rolodex in my mind.
Sure.
Mr. Mitchell, I want to talk about old school Broadway. I know we had.
Did you just call me Mr. Mitchell?
I said be polite for once in my life. Jerry, since we're
why start now, Alexander?
I know. I have to know. You know, there's this old school thought. It's like, oh, Broadway's becoming so corporate. It's becoming so commercial. What do you say to that? And so it's especially towards
a strange loop is what I say to that.
You say what?
A A Strange Loop.
Okay.
There's nothing corporate about A Strange Loop.
Not one thing.
And it's a brilliant, brilliant musical. You have to see it.
I just listened to it. I did see it. It's great on Broadway, and I just listened to it again on the drive down and tried to sing along.
Yeah. But it's funny because I remember when jukebox musicals first started coming out, I was like, oh, that's the end of Broadway. Broadway's dead, whatever. And then we had movies now as musicals. And so, you know, there's always this kind of resistance from an older generation of what Broadway is. But, you know.
Did they really hate Jersey Boys that much?
It's a
jukebox musical.
Yeah. Well,
they
yeah.
10 years. How about Mama
and the movie's
Mia?
Coming out?
Did they hate Mamma Mia that much? It's a jukebox musical.
Original cast.
Yeah, original cast.
Three movies.
Oh gosh,
Jerry. On a personal note, I want to know how you balance your personal life with your career. You're always jutting around. Like you just told us, you're working on how many projects? Rehearsing a show, opening a show, in the limelight. How do you do all that? Maintain your mental health and a relationship.
Well, I have a great partner. That's the first who allows me to do it all, and he's a performer actually, in a Ricky Schroeder, not that Ricky Schroeder.
Yeah, thank God.
Ricky A. Schroeder, who actually was in Kinky Boots in the National. He actually was in Kinky Boots my pre-production period. We met right after I cast the Broadway show. He probably would have ended up being in the Broadway show because I saw him in a drag show just before we met. And then we started dating, and he was in the national tour, and he's going to be in the off-Broadway production. He, Ian Fitzgerald, and Tommy Martinez, who were all in the first national tour, have been cast in the off-Broadway production. So they'll be together with a couple of other originals from Broadway, but most of the cast is new. And first of all, we have a great, great relationship and just super supportive of each other and what we each need separately as well as together. And that takes care of that. Mental health, you know, I've been lucky because I've always been pretty centered in the way I think. And I was raised really, I think, very generously by parents and grandparents who taught me the difference between right and wrong and good and bad and yes and no and polite and not being polite and how to make a dollar. And taught me a lot of important lessons that I still carry to this day with myself and try to teach to my nieces and nephews because I've got 15 of them.
Oh my God.
family is a big part of my life. And although I haven't seen them for 2 years because of this damn COVID shit. And the beach. I go to the beach. Yeah. I go to the beach to recharge. I have a house at the beach and I go there a lot.
Do you have like centering techniques or just?
I sit, meditate.
Like journal or meditate. Yeah.
I sit on the beach and meditate. Mm.
Well, I have to tell you, Jerry, in doing research and watching your interviews, but other interviews where people talk about you, everybody just talks so highly about you. And what struck me is how you remember everybody's names from your days in Will Rogers. And you don't just remember their first names. You remember first and last name. And to me, that's always a sign of respect when somebody remembers. I mean, I can't remember like my own name sometimes, but it's such a sign of respect. And you just have this positive energy. And from other people's interviews, when they talk about you, is how you've touched their lives, how you've helped them in their career, whether it's a big name celebrity or it's somebody that was in an ensemble that you worked for. You just have this very positive, infectious energy. And with the good that you started with Broadway Bears, that's just testament to everything. And in all your shows, you know it's a Jerry Mitchell show because there's this like positivity, there's this light. And so, you know, I, as a fan, I have to thank you for everything that you've put out there.
Thank you. That means a lot. I always look for shows that make the audience feel better when they leave than they felt when they walked in.
Love Never Dies? What?
But God, when I heard the first two songs, I thought this could be so spectacular. You know, Love Never Dies was a wonderful experience because I was with Jack O'Brien. Mm-hmm. Anything I do with Jack, we've had a decade of collaboration together. But the challenge with that musical, and really with any musical, in the success of a musical, I think, is directly related to the success of the collaboration and how the team works together. And on Love Never Dies, that there wasn't really a lot of collaboration because the team wasn't present. You know, Andrew had written it, and Glenn had written the lyrics, but he wasn't around. I don't know where he was, and the book writer wasn't around. They weren't around. When I'm doing a new musical, I require the composer and the lyricist and anyone else who is working, the book writer, the composer, the lyricist, anyone who's writing the musical, to be in the room every single day, listening to the actors interpret their material, because the strangest things come out of listening and repeat. You realize what's working, what isn't, and what needs to be changed and what doesn't. You have to listen to it many, many times, over and over. And it's kind of like that, it will clear itself out if you just sit and listen. 80% of the job of a creative artist is listening to the person interpret the work.
Hmm. That was such a gem.
It was.
God, I've never heard that. I mean, I feel like I've heard everything, and that was something new. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah.
Just listen.
Mr. Barrett-Foe, after your seven-hour drive,
well, thanks.
Do you have any last question for Jeremy?
You know, I was listening on the way in, and I was I'm formulating some questions. You asked them all. Then I sat down, was going to ask everything that I was about to ask. You were like, I have that already written down. I'm like, wait, I thought I was the Broadway expert, and you were just the guy.
But you've lived it. I've just watched it from the audience.
Oh, my God. You're so good. You're so good at what you do, and you're so good at what you do, Jerry. Thank you for letting me just listen in. This was an honor.
Thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
I'm so excited to see Kinky Boots.
Yes.
And Pretty Woman.
I'm excited to see with 17,000 people.
Right?
Oh, it's going to be amazing.
Such a trip.
It's going to be amazing.
Watching on a jumbotron.
I mean, the last time, you know, I did Hairspray at the Hollywood Bowl with Krista and Harvey, and it was so much fun. It was so much fun doing it outside. I got my equity card at the Muni Opera, so that's 11,000. So I know what it's like to be out there outside. It's such a joy to perform outside in the open air. And the bowl, I told somebody this story. When I was five, my mom and dad packed me and my two brothers up in the car, and we came to California to go to Disneyland, and we were staying with my mom's maid of honor from her wedding and their family. And one day we went to Disneyland, we went to Knott's Berry Farm, and one day we came into Hollywood and went to the stars, saw the stars on the sidewalk, but we went to a tour to the Hollywood Bowl. So I remember standing on the stage at 5 years old at the Hollywood Bowl. Wow. Who'd have thought I'd be back there directing and choreographing a show? It's crazy.
That's awesome. Kinky Boots comes to the Hollywood Bowl. I believe it's the second week of July, July 7th, 8th. I think it's a three-night run.
9th and 10th.
Yes. And Pretty Woman is at the Dolby Theater, and it's heading to the Circus Drum in Costa Mesa. And I can't wait till you can finally share and name the new projects that you're working on.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to let you get some rest because you got some busy weeks ahead of you.
I got rehearsal tomorrow.
Yes.
Right and early.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Happy Pride. Happy Broadway Bears.
Thank you, Jerry.
What an honor. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right, Bear, just real fast before we go, I have to know what you thought of the Tonys.
Jerry, are you still on?
I'm here, but I'm done.
Yes. Yes. Yes, you are.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. They're like, you have this set time. And we went over and I was like,
Are we on air?
Yes.
Okay, this isn't just like me.
Give your professional.
Alexander and
No. I have to know because I hadn't watched the Tonys, to be honest, in a few years.
Okay. Let me talk about the Tonys.
Yes.
So I've been to the Tonys many times.
You were backstage.
Twice as the official CBS social media correspondent and backstage on air host. And so I was in as the social media correspondent, I was in all the rehearsals and was in Radio City. And just as a cast would come in for the rehearsal, I'd go into the cast and be like, I know five of these people. I know three of these people. And the CBS publicity ladies were like, wait, you what? You know all these people? And I was like, yeah, I'm not just, you know, NCIS LA's little nerd on there. I'm like, this was my old life. These are all my peeps. So that was so fun, but it was so exhausting. It was really, really like a very tiring job. And then the second time I did it, I was actually also doing 8 shows a week, doing Buyer and Seller, which is a one-man 100-minute monologue show. And it was absolutely exhausting and so much fun. I love New York. It's so charged, you know, and it's my hometown. Yep. So I was just there for 10 days and I made a plan. I was like, you know what? I'm going to be there for the Tonys. I didn't even realize. Hey, Todd. Hey, Joe. My old college buddies from University of Michigan. What are you doing for the Tonys? Oh, I'm just going to sit on my couch. That sounds lovely. I'm going to sit on the couch with you and just snuggle up and we're going to watch all our friends on screen. The night before, my friend Cody Lassen, he is the producer of How I Learned to Drive on Broadway, starring the original cast, Mary, what's her name? Three names.
Mary Louise Parker.
Yes. And he's like, do you want to go to the Tonys? My date got COVID. And I was like, I had a snuggle appointment with my friends from college. Yes.
Of course.
I gotta go. It's the Tonys. But you know what? When you're the Tonys is also you gotta get dressed up. I didn't have a tux. You know, I was just like visiting.
It's New York.
Family.
Everybody has a tux.
So I literally he was like, what I'm like, what do I do? He's like, go to Zara.
Yeah.
I went to Zara and got a suit off. I could thank God. Just got a suit off the rack.
Size 2. You lucky size 2.
And I borrowed my sister-in-law's like boob tape for her dress.
Her pasty.
So,
like,
so
oh,
that
kinky.
I can so my cuffs could be shorter.
Yeah.
And this is not the part that you asked for, but this is a fun part for me.
I love behind the scenes, so I love it. So
there
much.
You go. So I'm sitting with the How I Learned to Drive crew and the Vineyard Theater, and I know all these people, and it's just I just knew I had to go because I was like, it's all my old family, and I just have to also remind people that I exist because I've been in LA.
It's networking. That's
I need to say
a
hi.
A lot of business happens networking.
And it was, I mean, we were, you know, I think it was sort of like a 50-50 between Take Me Out and How I Learned to Drive, and it just happened to go to Take Me Out, which I had seen the day before and was so spectacular, and I was so proud of Jesse Tyler Ferguson, who won the Tony. I replaced Jesse Tyler Ferguson in the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. And not many people know this, but even before that, when we were like, I was a little baby out of college, I was in a workshop production like for 1 month of, does anyone remember the book by, is it Beverly Cleary or Beverly Cleary?
I was raised on her books.
Super Fudge.
Yeah, Super Fudge.
Or Bloom. No,
Judy Bloom. Bloom.
Judy Bloom.
Yeah.
That's it.
Judy Bloom.
Judy Bloom. Super Fudge. Jesse Tyler Ferguson played Super Fudge, and I played his older brother, Peter. And we had the best time, and he was – I mean, I just remember being in the room with him. I mean, we were doing a development of a children's show.
Yeah.
I couldn't stop laughing. Everything he did, he didn't have to be that funny. We were like in a children, like, and he was playing this like 5-year-old and just being so bizarre and so funny. And I'm like, who is this guy? He's so special. And I was the older brother. And then all those years later, I took over for him in Spelling Bee. And then I got to see him star in his Tony nominated performance that turned into a Tony winning performance. And I was in the audience for the Tonys watching my friend win this Tony, and all the Spelling Bee people were there. We had a little reunion at the party afterwards with all, we were just laughing and laughing at all the old Spelling Bee stories.
Was Jesse's understudy scared to meet you? He's like, what are you doing here, Eve?
Watch out.
Poor Eve. But you were there, so this energy, I watched it, and I loved it. There was, you know, every award show has its moments. You're like, that was kind of a miss. I couldn't believe the criticism the next day. I thought everybody's going to be excited. I couldn't wait to see what the ratings were, which went 40% up, by the way.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. But then I saw this criticism.
What are the kids saying?
People didn't like her as a host. People thought that the performances were flat. They thought that the sound was bad. They thought that she was nervous and stilted. I thought,
are you kidding me?
That's what
I
thought.
The same thing.
And I'm not just talking about one review. I'm talking about many reviews from big sources. And I was like, were they watching a different show than I was?
She commanded the 6,000 seat house that was Radio City Music Hall.
And I mean, the TV, live, by the way.
And the TV. Yeah. I mean, we saw it sort of on the Jumbotron as well. But we're there live, and she was like, we were her best friends. Not in like a manufactured way. She was easy and charming and she was inclusive and she was off the cuff. It wasn't I gotta do this and I gotta do that, and this is what we choreographed and we wrote. She was like, you know what? I'm going to do this now. I want to throw some attention to this understudy or this swing that went on for one of the girls in six last minute. You know, she really was in the moment and really jiving with the audience and driving with the flow of the show. I was super impressed. Oh, another behind the scenes thing that you missed was the act one, which is like the part one where Darren Criss and Juliana Huff.
They got some critique too.
They were great. No, in the room they were great. He wrote the song as well, the opening number. It was I thought really fun, and I was a fan of the Tonys. It made me love the Tonys all over again.
It reminded me of what the Tonys used to be, what award show used to be. I thought it brought back that magic. I thought she was great. It reminded me of like an old school diva that just commanded left and right. That was so seamless.
She could sing. She could. I was everything.
So I couldn't understand the criticism.
I've seen some stinky hosts. Or hosts that just didn't gel, or
100%. Or they were so stuck to what was going on. We know theater. You know theater.
And speaking of hosts, I want to talk about this for a second, because Billy Crystal did a moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it just reminded me. And then I saw him later in Mr. Saturday Night, and our friend Shoshana Bean, who got nominated for a Tony. And I mean, I've just known her for so long, and we had dinner afterwards. Wonderful. Billy Crystal, I mean, that guy, however old that man is, he, first of all, I was like, he just puts you at ease. He's just so good at what he does. And you sort of forget because he does make you so comfortable that you're like, oh, you're just sort of an old friend of mine. But I'm like, the way you command a stage, the way you're not only a comedian and a writer, but you're also an actor.
Yeah.
And then just all those like, those Oscar memories came back of him hosting. How many times did he?
There he is.
Like, he set a record, like hosting it more than anyone. I mean, there he is. Look at that.
But he's a veteran. Like, he's
just
that
such
that,
a vet.
That sense that I think that we don't have a lot.
The stars of David around.
That's so hot. Fan art. But I was really excited by the Tonys, and I'm excited where Broadway's going. But
I agree.
I fell in love with it. You know me. I'm the first one to be like, hated it. I was entranced. I mean, I hadn't sat and watched an award show like that in a while.
I agree. Entertaining.
How exciting that you were there, too.
It was
so
fun.
I have to ask, spill the tea. Yeah. Being back in New York 10 days, being along with all your theater friends, being at the Tonys.
Yeah.
Is it time to go back?
I think it's time to go back.
Oh!
I'm being drawn in that direction. But, you never know. You never know what's sort of next. But, I think it definitely reminded me of the electricity of that city,
and your part in it too.
Of my apartment?
No, of your part in it.
It's like, how do you know about my apartment? and my part in it. It's like my original family, I mean, NCSLA was a 12-year, gorgeous thing, but we got along when we were on set, but like it's just a different thing when you're on Broadway. You break at the same time and you have to go to dinner and you have to there's no like driving home to your family because those are long days on set. But in a show, it's just that you're just all in that little neighborhood and all your friends gather in between shows and all the girls have pin curls in their hair and they're all in their wigs and I just miss it.
I mean, yeah.
Everyone's eating sushi. Got to keep it light. Got to keep it light in between shows.
Well, I'd be sad to see you go back, but I would be so excited to see what would bring you back to Broadway.
Me too.
Yeah.
What will bring me back to Broadway?
Maybe it's a Jerry Mitchell.
Jerry
project.
Mitchell.
I would meet him for coffee tomorrow.
I was going to say, I'm going to text him.
I know what hotel he's at.
Just show up in the lobby.
I know. Hey. Imagine how awkward. With the piano, like singing 16 bars.
dancing.
That's so hot. Barrett, please tell everybody where you want them to find you and follow you.
Oh, please find me and follow me at Barrett Foa.
That's two R's, two T's.
Two R's, two T's. I was going to give you my email address. Don't, I'm not going to do that.
Nobody uses AOL anymore anyway.
Oh, that's right. Oh, you don't tell them.
Do you know who does use AOL? Lainey Kazan.
I know some people who use AOL, and I'm like, girl. And they're like, it's just the way it is. It's going to be like that forever. I'm like, okay.
I'm so glad you drove straight here, literally from San Francisco.
I did not. Wait, can I say? I did not stop to get water or pee.
No, I can imagine.
Five and a half hours because I wanted to get here.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah. I'm so glad you made it. You brought such such energy and this inside. This is
of course, my pleasure.
Here.
I'm sorry I peed on your chair.
That's fine. Because
that just happened.
We had a Shaw of Sunset do the same thing.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
I think you told me that.
And Shoshana Bean also has been on the show. She was reading a magazine during the interview. She's like, is it my turn? We love you, Shoshana. Well, that's all, folks. It's always a grab bag of fun here every week on The Rocks. Big thank you to our fabulous guests, my guest co-host, literally driving in, our engineer, Tony Sweet, our social media clip editor, Alexis Mendez, researcher, Mama Rose, theater lovers. We've just been on a streak lately. We have members of the cast of the newer touring productions of Dear Evan Hansen and Moulin Rouge. Ooh. We also have choreographer and performer Bobby Newberry, who's worked with Eminem, Missy Elliott, Nicki Minaj, and Lil Wayne. Also, we have some other Bravo TV surprises in store, so please like, share, subscribe so we can continue bringing this fabulous programming coming your way. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, stay sexy. Most importantly, stay tipsy.
This has been another episode of On the Rocks. Tweet me and slide into my DMs on Twitter and Instagram at On the Rocks On Air. Find everything On the Rocks for free at ontherocksradioshow.com. Subscribe, like, review, and share. Until next week, stay fabulous.